Good morning and welcome to the Senator Hancock Town Hall with NFIB. We've got some folks that are still entering the Zoom call, so we're going to just sort of slowly delay. We've got the Senator coming on in a minute. Before we do begin the program, I'd just like to mention that there is a chat box, and you'll see the little chat bubble on your Zoom in the computer that you can enter questions. We did receive some questions in advance. And we will be recording this call so that we can get everybody that recording after the call if you do have to leave early or if you'd like to review some of the questions that the Senator went over while we were on the call. I would like to introduce myself. I'm Annie Spillman. I'm the State Director for NFIB here in Texas. And John McCord, who you see there as well, is our Legislative Director here in Texas. And we are in charge of our advocacy in the state. Both he and I go across the street to the Capitol. We're located here in Austin, Texas, and we work with our 181 legislators of the Texas legislature. We also work with the governor's office and our state agencies. So we believe that being a member of NFIB is very critical because you have to run your business and work with your employees and customers, and you don't have time to read every single regulation that's out there. And I am proud to say that NFIB... Welcome, Senator. We were just kind of kicking it off. So I'm proud to say that NFIB did kill every single bill that we opposed last session. And we testified on about 167 pieces of legislation last session. So as we get into it, and before I introduce Chairman Hancock, I just wanted to remind everybody, you know, that small businesses create 2 out of 3 jobs in this country. And we've got about 20,000 NFIB members. That doesn't nearly recognize how many small businesses there are in the state. We've got almost 5 million businesses in the state, and we employ about 3 million people in the state. And as you know, we've been dealing with COVID. And if anybody can get through this, it's the small business community. You're very resilient and you're innovative. Many of you have had to decide if you're keeping your business open, maybe transition into a new way to operate. And that's what we're dealing with right now. And the governor's office has been great about working with NFIB and seeking our input on how that we could safely reopen. And so we've been very proud to be a resource for the governor's office, the lieutenant governor, and the speaker, as well as the members of the Senate and the House. So let's jump into it. I'd like to proudly say hello and recognize Chairman Kelly Hancock. He has been a friend to NFIB for a long time. I met him when he came into the House in 2006. He served in the House of Representatives from 2006 to 2012, and then he entered into the Senate. I love the Senate, but I'm House trained, so I was sad when he left, but we work with those senators, obviously, as well. But he went over to the Senate in 2013, so as of right now, he's been serving for 14 years. And I say serving because I want everybody to really remember that Texas is a citizen legislature. These people they're not career politicians. They don't get paid to do what they're doing. Really, it just kind of covers their travel to get from Dallas, Tarrant County area down to Austin. But they serve, and they're doing it because they love the state and they want to take care of the people in the state. So keep that in mind. Chairman Hancock is a business owner. It's a small business owner. It's a family-founded business. So not only is he coming into Austin to take care of his constituents, but he's also running his business and taking care of his employees and his customers. So if anybody really understands the needs of the small business community, it's Chairman Hancock. He has received the Guardian of Small Business Award on multiple occasions. One award had a little malfunction, so we had to get him a new statue. So hopefully you have that one in your office. And then I would just like to recognize that he is not only the chairman of the Business and Commerce Committee, which is one of the most critical committees in the state of Texas and especially to the small business community, but he also serves on the Transportation Committee, which is obviously very important. Finance. I mean, the only reason we have a legislative session is to deal with, you know, our budget. Obviously, we're going into a bit of a budget shortfall this session. He also serves on the Natural Resources Economic Development Committee, which also deals with a lot of small business issues, as well as the Property Tax Committee. And we know that property tax is one of the biggest burdens on the small business community. So we will get into it. Chairman Hancock, thank you so much for being here and welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I almost Well, I was late to the webinar due to inventory. So yes, we do run our own business, and I was reviewing some reorder points. We typically have about 2,500 SKUs, and I was going through reorder points as we completed inventory and trying to stay on top of things, as well as run a business, which really is what we were looking at when COVID struck and all of a sudden the quarantines hit. We'd been receiving updates and kind of knew what was going to be going on. But immediately, you know, as chair of business and commerce, our mindset really started going on trying to figure out how do we keep the economy going as much as possible in the midst of a COVID shutdown, which is what we were looking at. And so fortunately, Texas has stayed, and we've pushed as chair of business and commerce, we've pushed to try to stay on top of things and get government out of the way as much as possible. And so we were able to look at legislation that we had passed and tweak it a little bit on some recommendations that we had with the governor. But we were, especially early on, working literally every day and just constantly things going on, working with him in order to continue as much business as possible as you're not allowed to go in. Our business, I'm fortunate, I'm in chemical distribution business, and while our revenues are off about 40%, obviously everybody knows sanitizers and disinfectants are kind of important right now. So chemical industry went from being the bad guy to being the clean guy, and everybody was interested in. So stayed a little bit busy there on doing that. But we just began looking at it and making recommendations, and we saw things change, and you know, just trying to look at things that we never thought we'd expect before. In fact, there was really no one for us to call on, and so I didn't have a mentor, I didn't have anybody previously in the Senate, because we've never walked through this before as a state, literally in our history. It was something that hit us totally different, and then we had to be prepared for it. And so that's kind of what we did. And what we saw was from the governor's office on down, we just saw a lot of things happening. And so we saw a lot of rules and regulations that we could get out of the way. I'm going to try to pull up this, but I had another one I'm going to try to get. Let's see if I can pull up from my calendar. Chairman, up a list.
After doing that, Chairman, I just want to remind people, everyone will be muted during this presentation, but we have the chat box to the right, so please enter your questions or comments.
Yeah. So what I asked the staff to do a couple of weeks back to provide to all the Business Commerce Committee members was really a listing of the various changes that we've seen the governor come out with. So early on, it was almost a different type of proclamation, literally almost daily, of things that would pop up and businesses that would call. And some of that was hearing from your lobbyists, your government affairs people there in Austin that were representing their associations. Some of it was literally the fact that you have elected officials that are business owners. I remember I had a driver walk in one day and tell me he had to go renew his driver's license in the midst of the shutdown, which I'm like, no, you don't need to go wait in line at to redo your driver's license. And so we pulled him back, made a few phone calls to the governor's office. And that's, we saw the postponing of that we extended those licenses, which we extended a lot of licenses. That prompted a lot of other extensions and renewals. And then I will say there at the end, I had a driver come in and needed his hazmat certification and eye test. And so we back with the governor's office saying, look, we've got to figure out a way that you don't have to go get an eye test at, when you're getting a driver's license. And that you can take this hazmat certification test as nothing more than a multiple choice test. Surely we can do that online so we can eliminate the lines. So we were looking ahead of time. And then the other thing we're looking is when this is over, and one day it will be over, we don't want, where we've postponed the renewal of license, we don't want all of a sudden these agencies to be slammed when the gates are open, and everybody now is trying to renew as quickly as they can. So we've got to come up with new ways of operating. But the list that was put together and just the actions of the governor, and some of these are governor's actions, and some of them are literally the agencies coming forward and relaxing some of the rules that went on, both for education purposes.
Kelly, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think we're getting the wrong screen. We're not seeing the screen with the – I think we've got your calendar that we're seeing right now.
All right. Here, let me –
I know it's tricky. Zoom is tricky.
There we go. How's that?
That's great. Thank you.
Got that one?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I had to pull it off the calendar because it wasn't pulling up on my other screen. But, yeah, this is just kind of a listing that we showed we put together. And you can kind of see the various – let me make that a little bit larger. You can see the various areas kind of all over the board, medical, learning. And what ended up being is 10 pages of changes and regulations or rules that the governor brought forward. And so it's literally all over the board. I remember having a realtor call me, catch me in my yard, literally at the house, and said, well, what are we going to do about real estate? And, one of the things that we had previously done is allowed, literally your entire real estate transaction can now be taken care of online. And so some of it was educating folks, and some of it was actions that need to be taken by the governor or these agencies. But you can see it's really all over the board, different areas, Public Utility Commission, making sure people weren't losing as jobs were being eliminated, that they weren't losing electricity for their home. And so that's kind of that. And then I'll bring up, just so we focus on some of these others. So that was the entire list. What I want to do is give you a new share here of just the ones we want to talk about. There we go. And so some of the ones we want to focus on today with the group is a lot of changes took place in DPS. Obviously, we talked about the licensing requirements and delays there. Commercial trucking, we obviously wanted it to continue to go on. In fact, I remember having to attend the quick meeting down with the governor, and weren't a lot of cars on the road, but there were trucks on the road. And work in that direction. So several things in the transportation arena, really, and what it's prompted is discussions between the governor's office as well and the transportation community on what all we can do online. So we're looking at expanding online services when it comes to transportations. We know for sessions upon sessions, we've tried to deal with the long lines and the delays in getting your license and at those locations. And so hopefully this has spurred some new thought and some new creativity on how to do that better in an online mechanism when it comes to transportation. Obviously, learning has changed significantly, both in higher ed and K through 12. There's a lot of discussions now. And of course, it always seems to center around funding when it comes to education. So everybody wants to know, are we going to get the same weight, the same amount of money per child, whether they're in a desk or whether they're working out of home. The other thing that we're seeing is in certain areas, people really embrace this type of learning environment. In fact, had an update yesterday with the chair of education, Senator Taylor, and he was talking about how several of the teachers in rural areas enjoyed and appreciated the distance learning rather than having to commute and drive as much on there. But it did create quite a bit of challenges on doing that as well and concerns. So they're walking through that funding. There's a great website, the TEA, for those that are interested in education, and we'll provide this link on our website. But it's a link to the TEA COVID website, and TEA's done a masterful job at putting out recommendations for local school districts and school boards to adopt, and just advising them that as we do open up schools and the plans are to open up school, that what we're finding is that a number of parents are a little leery on sending their kids back to school. Either they've got health issues at home or someone at home has a health issue. And so it's really going to challenge and push educational change in the future years to accommodate the impact that we've had. We've constantly tried to update and bring some new things into the education arena. Frankly, it's very, very difficult. That's an area that likes what they're doing, and they're not very they don't change very easily. Well, COVID kind of forced that mentality to change, and there, while it's still being fought in certain areas, there are certain systems that are embracing all those changes, and we're really seeing teaching being done in a different style and really kind of catching up with where business has been on some of that. I know in our business, we have an enormous amount of training that takes place, and we've been online for a number of years now. It's just easier to record, easier to track, and keep that information. TABC, we worked with them a lot on doing this. One of the interesting things, one of the ones that became very popular is the ability to pick up a margarita with your Mexican food, and I know several of us appreciated that, and that really wasn't legislation, or that wasn't a change that just kind of came out of the sky. What happened last session is many of the third-party delivery services had come and legislated and wanted legislation to allow them to deliver those type of beverages at the same time they were picking up and delivering food. And so we had passed that for third-party delivery services to provide that. And so we were it's one of the things that the legislation allows us to do is thoroughly vet that. And so this, I know that talked to some people who were concerned about it, and I just shared with them that the reality is we kind of went through this on these third-party delivery service and all the nuances that you normally don't have time to think about when you're trying to do something in a pandemic. And so it had already been vetted and well thought up, and we've had no minors that have been cited or issues with this. The restaurants have really done a good job. TABC, they had to move very quickly on the rules, but all the governor really had to do on that is take the legislation that we'd sent to them that we'd passed during session, allowing third-party delivery service, and just adapt it slightly to allow individuals who are picking up their own food to have the same freedoms as those third-party delivery services. And it's been very popular. And we followed up on it, and it's been very safe, and the restaurants have done a good job with it. I know not all of them wanted to take on that risk, and so some didn't, but those that did. And it was purely a way – we knew our restaurants were going to financially struggle with the lockdown, and so it was a way for us to try to – understanding business and understanding that all revenue matters – to help them generate a little bit more revenue if possible. And so it was all, as a business owner, it was our thinking of, all right, how can we help these businesses that are suffering and going through such dramatic changes, help them continue to operate and generate as much revenue as possible. And so that obviously happened and was very popular. And one of the pieces of legislation as we move forward that I think we'll probably see an expansion of the third-party delivery services to allow individuals once session starts. Telemedicine is an issue that for literally session upon session, we've tried to expand the ability to provide telemedicine. It has actually been fought within the medical community. And I know our family got to partake in it. And what we've experienced is both the physician, the medical community, and the patient really seem to adapt to this very quickly, appreciate it, enjoy it, much more efficient. You're not driving 30 minutes across town to go see your doctor and then 30 minutes home. And so this is another area that has been discussed, and we've not been able to implement it as much as we, as some would like within the community. But one of the benefits of, I guess, the pandemic is it did force this change, and what we've seen on both sides is Is the change has been receptive by those who maybe were not so willing to change previously, and it seems to have worked out extremely well. Doing that also in the allowing your pharmacist to consult over that. Just, you know, we're trying to find ways to continue the practice, to continue the economy and the interaction without having it being person to person. And so a lot of these were just little tweaks. And some of them were just things we've tried to do for years and weren't able to do, and the pandemic opened the door to allow us to do it. And now that we find out that the sky's not going to fall, which is why what we're told on some of these things is, oh, it's just going to be terrible. You know, people are going to die if you allow telemedicine. And what we found is that's not the case. So I think in several areas, it'll be very difficult for us to go back to government as it was after we've experienced this. So in the midst of a crisis, I do think there are some silver linings, especially in the business community, that we're going to see as we move forward. Continuing education, we talked about those, eliminating the need for these classroom educational services, pushing more and more that into an online access and areas, even allowing meetings and board meetings and other things to be conducted online. And so we're seeing a lot of these changes taking place. Insurance is the big issue that the federal government's looking at right now as businesses open up, specifically restaurants. There's a new increased risk, obviously, that takes place with COVID, and how's that going to be handled in litigation down the road. And so we're trying to look at that and working with the federal government and also talking about at the state level, providing some protections there so you're not there's no disincentive to try to keep the economy going and provide a safe health work environment as we open things back up, that we can reduce that risk as much as we can as on business owners. And then one of the things that popped up, this is actually legislation that we had that allowed for notary services. And this is, in fact, sold a piece of property for my parents. They're, you know, 85 now and not able to travel, and did everything completely online and closing a piece of property in another state. Several were not aware of the notary service, so we contacted the Texas Association of Realtors and asked them to encourage their members and let them know, and then title companies as well, that you are able to have notary. And in fact, you can have witnesses there, and simply by taking a video or taking pictures showing that you had witnesses there online. One of the areas that was not passed legislatively was in regards to wills. Well, one of the things COVID created was a strong desire for new wills, first-time wills, and so the governor did extend that to allow for attorneys on, medical power of attorney, a couple of things that weren't in there. So a lot of what you saw the governor do was literally taking legislation that had been vetted and passed through the body and through the process and just simply extend it. And so in other areas, he literally took legislation that had been through the process that we were aware of, such as telemedicine, had not been able to pass simply from not being able to get the votes, and then implement it in this new environment. And so as chair of business and commerce, to me, it's very intriguing. As we go into session, the reason we've put this list together and we continue to evaluate it, and the Senate has adopted a business working group to discuss all of these things as we move forward and look and see if there are other ways that we can actually continue to eliminate government intrusion into your business and provide a safe working environment at the same time. So that's where we are, and I'll have all this on our website. If you want to go and access it there. But to me, it's been very, very interesting as we've gone into this, just to kind of see what can happen and how quickly government can move and how we can operate without as many rules and regulations in our way. And so it's kind of opened up the doors in some areas. And I think as elected officials, it's our job to come in back behind that And as we do, look at what we want to permanently implement and what worked.
Yeah, I agree. And I appreciate that presentation. A lot of what you said are some things that we heard from our members. And, you know, as you know, as a business owner, it's just when the government gets out of their way and just lets them run their business, it's what works best and sort of let the market speak for itself. I mean, obviously in today's market and, you know, with unemployment being what it is and, you know, the lack of revenue because they haven't been able to open, businesses are looking at, you know, obviously layoffs, but maybe not being able to provide a certain benefit, bonuses, wage increases. But we know going into next session, as we see every session, there's a faction of people that push the national, you know, agenda with, you know, fight for 15, increasing the wage to $15 an hour. And really most of our members provide a well above the $7.25 minimum wage. There's also, you know, especially their city ordinances mandating paid sick leave. Most of our members offer that. However, when it's operated by the government, operating an employer's benefit package, I mean, they can barely take care of the potholes in the street, let alone, you know, handle their benefits program. So, you know, that's something that we're kind of playing whack-a-mole dealing with it on the city level. But, you know, we're going to see it this session. And, you know, I just going into COVID, obviously, after COVID going into session, you know, it's going to be harder to explain to the general population that we can't just have a one-size-fits-all mandate on minimum wage or paid sick leave when our members already operate on thin margins. And to tell them now to have to, you know, up their pay or offer these benefits is nearly impossible.
Right. And we talked about that during session, you know, from a political standpoint, when you've got essentially full employment, pushing a lot of these things is much easier than when you have 13% unemployment. And one of the things, had NFIB not been able to kill much of this legislation that would have mandated these things, I know our business, we had options. You know, I could either reduce the number of people or we could reduce compensation across the board, which we did. I mean, which it was an option that we had to look at. And so you've got to provide businesses the flexibility because it's easy for government to mandate businesses when business is good, but business isn't always good. And those of us that have been around in the business world for a while know that it does ebb and flow, and you need to have that flexibility as a business owner in order to adjust. And then sometimes you're adjusting simply to save jobs.
Exactly. And it's kind of an economics 101. So we appreciate legislators like you who get it. And, you know, you're a legislator, but you know that you need to kind of stay out of the way sometimes. And you're there to protect your constituents. And I will say, before we jump into the questions, we've got some pre-planned questions. And then we do have that chat box, folks. So this is your opportunity. You know, like I said, the senators on actually, most of the committees that are critical to the way you own and operate your business. So this is your chance. But just as a reminder, we've got a research foundation, and we ballot our members. And every single year, so we've kind of have our Texas top 10 on problems and priorities, and I'm sure everyone on this call can sympathize with this, but cost of health insurance is number one. There were over 40 new health insurance mandates filed last session, and we killed all but one of them. Uncertainty over economic conditions. That's what we're dealing with right now. Uncertainty over government actions and uncertainty over government regulations. So when businesses, as you know, are uncertain about the future, they can't invest back into their employees or invest back into their business and expand and offer more jobs. And so going into that, we've got some questions that lead into this, and I'll just read them sort of verbatim as they were given to us. Governor Abbott waived several regulations in the healthcare field to increase capacity at facilities across the state. Do you think that some of these regulations could be permanently repealed in an effort to increase access to care in rural areas? Examples, you know, include physicians and training, PAs, telehealth regulations, APRN requirements. So, and as a matter of fact, NFIB did support the telemedicine legislation because we have a lot of members in these rural areas that need access to care.
Yeah, no, I think, as I said, I think one of the things that happened is that in the medical community have those that weren't familiar with it, therefore they didn't like it, and you had those that just didn't want change, and so they didn't like it. And then there are those that are afraid that it will impact Medicaid reimbursements, so they didn't like it. Well, with the pandemic, it's easy to overcome. You kind of can force force change that people aren't comfortable with. And now that that's occurred, I think we've seen a receptivity to it, and we've seen a benefit from it, both in our rural areas, but in your urban suburban areas as well. I mean, because initially they didn't want you in their offices. You know, they figured out how to do it one patient at a time, this and that, but they still want to see more and more patients. They prefer not to have that person-to-person contact unless it's absolutely necessary. The other thing it's allowed is to be more efficient. So I think the pandemic, COVID has forced these changes, and what we've seen is once they've been implemented, that they're not as bad, nasty as they were portrayed to be, and actually some people that may have opposed it, I think, are going to be supportive this next time around.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I actually experienced a telemedicine appointment myself, and I feel like it was almost more personal experience with my doctor than it would have been in the office. You know, we were talking just like this, and it was a unique experience, and I do think that Texans will realize that that might be something that will be beneficial to everybody. You kind of hit on this, but one of the questions was, for many occupational licenses, renewal late fees have been waived under the governor's disaster declaration. Do you think the legislature will consider making these changes personally? Additionally, do you think the legislature will review the frequency with which some of these occupational licenses need to be renewed?
I think the frequency, yes. I think waiving the late fee, you know, it's understandable when you had literally an economic change that happened overnight, waiving those late fees. Once the economy gets back, you know, that's just going to be a regular process that you accrue for, you prepare for, and you pay. So I don't see waiving the late fees being extended because then nobody will pay on time. But I do think that we'll be looking at all aspects of licensing and renewals and training and how that training takes place. You know, and we've already started doing that. Cosmetology, we reduced training from 1,500 hours to 1,000. So we'll continue to do that as we move forward.
Well, and I will say to those of us, our folks on the call, the legislature, mm-hmm. including yourself personally in your committee, you know, charged the Department of Licensing and Regulation several years back to really streamline their process there and, you know, get rid of some of these licenses that aren't necessary or stop, you know, this, if they need to be licensed on the state level, you know, they don't need to be licensed on the local level and things like that. So DLR really has streamlined their process. And I will tell you that our members have appreciated that. Occupational licensing has sort of been a thorn in our members, behind for a while. So we appreciate that. And I, you know, I'm just worried that as for an effort to sort of make up revenue that the agency might come back and then create more requirements for licensing in order to get more revenue in. I mean, do you see that happening?
No.
Okay.
as long as I'm chair of business and commerce in the Senate, that would be very difficult.
Okay, good. Well, we appreciate that. The third question had to deal with alcohol to go. You know, a small business owner, they need that wine when they get home. So you've already addressed that. We appreciate the governor doing that, and hopefully, you know, the legislature will stand behind him on that, and we'll keep it going because it really has been the lifeblood of several restaurants. You know, I know the Ellis Wings family who owns El Arroyo here in Austin, and you have that image there, and he was so appreciative of that, and. So we hope that keeps going in all seriousness.
We saw restaurants that were shut down literally open up once that was enacted. So,
and I think everybody went about it responsibly. Like you said, I have not heard of any instances that it ended up in a bad situation. Obviously, well, you're worried about the liability, but we haven't seen any of that.
Well, and those that's one as well that. You know, we've got a three-tier system set up, and so there were those within that three-tier system that were initially opposed to that. They were afraid that it would cut into their numbers or, you know, their percent of the market. And I think once it's implemented, then some of those fears subside when
it works.
When reality presents itself.
Well, it's like we said, can't say it enough. I mean, just let business owners operate their business. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing more than the government knows. You know how to tell them to operate it. And so when it was opened up, they figured it out. They were innovative, and they made it happen. So that being said, you know, several restaurants were kind of – there was regulation and structural changes in that, like, restaurants could turn into a grocery store and start selling groceries. And, you know, things like that. Do you think that there will be sort of that the lightening of certain regs on these industries in that regard?
Well, that's one of the things that we're looking at. We're talking in our the business group. That's it's not a committee. It's just kind of a group of senators just kind of discussing these top areas. And while we created that list that I showed at the very first, is I just wanted a template for us to look at and kind of break down and open up the walls of discussion. And so, yes, we're going to be having that. There'll be a lot going on. Obviously, redistricting, who knows what will happen with it. It could be postponed depending on when we get all of our data. Sounds like that may be pushed a little bit due to the census on that. But I really think this next session has the potential to be a very, very significant session for the business community in government taking a step back once again. You know, we've tried to do that since I've been elected and definitely since I've been chair of business and commerce. But, you know, this just kind of showed some things that we'd fought and beat our head against the wall trying to implement. We're not the disaster that those who fought against it said it was. And so I think it's going to be hard to go backwards.
I do, but I will tell you, you know, the small business community always kind of feels like they're being targeted. And to kind of counterpoint that, you'll have some of those legislators that are not business friendly that'll take advantage of this situation and, you know, start trying to push more mandates on these businesses and really come after them in terms of liability. And that actually was one of our questions. We're NFIB is working with Congress on the, you know, the next phase of this COVID legislation to talk about liability protections. Unless a business is grossly negligent in violating any sort of the, you know, health regulations and safety standards, there needs to be some sort of blanket indemnity for these businesses. And I know that we've already spoken with the Texans for Lawsuit Reform and Civil Justice League, and we plan on working with them on liability protections on the state level. Is that something that you believe that, you know, you'll be interested in working on?
Yeah, we began discussions on that very, very early on, knowing that, you know, one of the things that we've tried to do, Annie, is always look ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, we've passed legislation on autonomous vehicles. We passed legislation on robot delivery services, which are actually being implemented during the pandemic. Pharmacists were using these delivery robots to deliver prescriptions. And so we've tried to make sure we stayed out in front. You know, Texas, that prior to the pandemic, has the strongest economy in the nation. And we know the only way we do that is that we stay forward thinking and that we're thinking ahead. And so immediately, even though we're in the beginning stages of COVID, we were already thinking at the end, what's going to happen at the end? How do we, you know, when we opened up and require license renewals again, how do we eliminate the lines? How do we expedite these services? So we're pushing the agencies in this, in that direction. Mm-hmm. But we also began to reach out and talk to those that focus on these areas. And we've looked at past legislation. If people remember the Black Mode situation, you know, so,
ADA, drive-by lawsuits.
Yep, and Hailstorm, and some of the things we've looked at legislation we've created in the past to try to see what we might need to have in the state. Fortunately for these business, you know, a lot of the business owners within FIB, if you live in Texas, you're already pretty well protected mm-hmm. in that front. But we're also looking at it and working with outside groups to make sure that we batten those boards closed. We don't leave any gaps.
That will be a priority for NFIB. I mean, small business owners don't have in-house attorneys or compliance officers. And so they are just a sitting duck. And a lot of times these attorneys will come in, you know, and serve them a letter and say they're going to sue them. But, okay, we'll settle out, you know, out of court for $5,000. It's just extortion. And so we're here to make sure that that doesn't happen. And we've supported legislation, old sessions back that, you know, was helping in that area as far as protections. So last session, there was a bill passed that NFIB supported and lobbied. House Bill 492 from the 86th legislature provides a property tax exemption from property affected by a natural disaster that was declared as a disaster by FEMA, and then the governor declared as a disaster, showing at least 15% damage. After an assessment by a chief appraiser for the damage, the calculation was made determining the amount of the exemption. That exemption, and actually we're part of a property tax stakeholder group, and we did ask the AG if this could apply in an economic disaster. The answer was no. So that exemption only applies to property damage from a disaster and the cost to cure property damage. Would the legislature consider expanding that to cover intangible items like loss of rent, revenue, et cetera, that occurred in the wake of an economic disaster like COVID? And I will tell you that most businesses did not get business, they might either don't have business interruption insurance or they weren't able to draw from it. They were denied. And so do you think that we can expand that legislation next session?
So typically your insurance, and mine's the same way. Like I said, I get it. And, you know, I saw overnight our business was in great shape, you know, hiring employees, and all of a sudden overnight, 40% reduction. We're heavy in oil and gas, and it's not going to come back for a while. It is what it is, and we've made adjustments. The goal went very quickly from making money to trying not to lose money to breaking even on doing that. So I get it in business interruption, but I know that the contract that I signed with that insurance company, that was an exemption, that the pandemics is part of that exemption, knew it when I signed it. And, you know, one of the things we try to avoid, just like we don't want, is to not let government interfere with individual contracts. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of just a let businesses negotiate their contracts and operate under those contracts as they move forward on it.
Well, and maybe not necessarily with the insurance companies in regard to their actual policies, but just as far as in their work. So, for instance, the comptroller deferred the franchise tax payments to July 15 when they're regularly due in May. And then there's been some other areas where there's been some tax relief. But, you know, in the way of taxes, if they suffered this economic damage, could they exempt their, you know, property taxes or whatever? I mean, let's just kind of think about maybe, and it's going to be hard because I know, you know, these taxes help with our budget. And so NFIB, we've always said the franchise tax was a miserable tax, and our folks have to pay it whether they, you know, net an income or not. The business personal property tax, while Texas is one of the best regulatory states, the business personal property tax in Texas is one of the most burdensome on small businesses. And we've talked about things about, you know, exempting or reducing the inventory tax. We're still going to go into session asking that. And I know it's going to be a tall task because obviously the state draws from that tax revenue.
And one of the things I think should be – one of the things on property tax I'll say first before I get into the other is – you know, right now what we're having to fight are some local entities that are trying to take advantage of COVID in mm-hmm. order to raise, you know, we took care of property taxes. You know, we limited the growth in property taxes, but yet under the pandemic, we have some that are trying to increase that beyond the 3.5 that we have for cities and counties, and the 2.5 for school districts. So school districts, they know they're going to get made up for at the state level. Cities and counties are, some of them are looking at trying to break through that 3.5 cap that we put on there, and that limit that forces you to take it to the voters. I'm doing that. So we're fighting that front right now, trying to stop that from occurring. But one of the things I think that possibly could be of interest in looking at, I know, for example, you know, our shipments going out stopped a lot faster than our shipments coming in. So my inventory short-term grew, and possibly providing some inventory relief and adjustments during a pandemic may be the right approach on it. You know, my facilities aren't worth less, you know, the brick and mortar, but all of a sudden I went from that we might, looking at something, your inventory turns, that you're not punished when your inventory balloons because, you know, if we do a lot of importing, and so 6 to 12 week lead time, well, I had things on the water, and all of a sudden my customers aren't buying anymore. So
yeah,
we saw a big increase in value that again turned into property tax value that I could be penalized for. And I'm already being penalized because my inventory turns are slowing down. So there may be things we can look at.
Right. John?
Karen, this is John Court. How are you this morning?
Good.
I wanted to jump in because you mentioned property taxes really quickly, and I had a conversation. We've had this conversation with members around the state, but last week I was visiting with a member down in South Texas. We were talking about the property tax bill from last session and how appreciative they were, but this particular member was in commercial real estate and has a number of properties, and the thing that he has seen consistently over the last year is his property valuation, with no changes to it, go up 200 to 300%. While the tax rate isn't increasing, the valuation has skyrocketed in the last 12 months. Is that something that the legislature might look at this session, or you know, take a look at some localities that are trying to take an end around the legislation that y'all passed last session?
Well, the key thing of what we passed last session is it's not based on the value, it's based on the growth. And so if the value went up 20%, the growth in that entity's, that municipality's total tax revenues are still limited to 3.5% growth in the total revenues. So, you know, that I would say, and I'll just take my personal example, and it didn't happen, but I wish it would happen. If the warehouse that I own goes up 20%, but yet the taxes that I have to pay on that warehouse are limited to a 3.5% growth, then my equity just increased by 20% in my property, yet my taxable my taxes that I have to pay, while the value of my property is higher, the rate has to be lower because they can only go up 3.5. So it's based on, and that's what a mindset we have to change, right? Because previously local entities, they could increase your taxes without ever increasing the rate based on your value. Well, now if the value goes up, they actually have to lower your rate. So it's forcing local entities to adjust that rate down to compensate for an increase in value of someone's property. So from an individual standpoint, increased equity is always a good thing. The increase in value of your property, what we've done now legislatively is we've not allowed local municipalities to capture that revenue because they're limited on the revenue they can capture. So they've got to lower the rate. If total values in a city or a county go up 7%, well, they've got to lower that rate to limit the revenues to that 3.5, or they got to take it to the voters. So,
yeah, and we appreciated that legislation last session. I will tell you though, we surveyed our members on the property tax stuff, and I think knowing that the legislature was going to act and lower that rate in which they could tax cities, were going in, and we had folks that were going in and getting taxed 40% over what they were being taxed the previous year, knowing that the legislature was going to cap. So I think that some cities or counties have abused, you know, their power. But I can tell you, we'll bring it next session because we've just heard so many things about property tax increases. We've got about 10 minutes left. And we want to get to a lot of these that are in the chat box. We've got some really great questions here. John, why don't you fire away and read those off, a couple of those to the senator.
Sure. One of the first ones that was submitted was about TEA regulations and opening schools back up in the fall. I know that you had mentioned that you visited with Chairman Taylor in the Education Committee earlier this week. Is there any update you can provide just on kind of what employees with kids or business owners with kids can expect here in about another 60 days?
One of the things that is happening is obviously we've received a lot of federal funding. That funding has to go towards COVID issues. And so, in fact, I saw the bid on sanitizer. I think the TEA is purchasing 500,000 gallons of sanitizer that will be dispersed out to the schools. They're going to be buying masks and sending those out to the schools. And so school districts are very locally run, but there are recommendations that TEA has on their website for the school districts. They're telling districts to anticipate 50% capacity in the classroom. Part of that is distancing, but the other part of that is based on what they've heard and what some information provided to them, that there are just going to be a number of families that are not going to enter that environment for a little while.
Yeah, it's been tough, and I will tell you, though, on that level, too, that goes into business operations and business owners, because they're, you know, the Family Medical Leave Act, and they're having to work. They need that flexibility to work with their employees on a case-by-case basis, and they don't need Congress or the state of Texas or, you know, to tell them to give them this amount of paid sick leave and it's for this or that. You know, our folks basically just say, you've got PTO, I don't care how you use it, and then sometimes they'll say, you know, hey, Mr. Hancock, my kid has a choir concert this afternoon. Can I head out and do that? Absolutely. So that's when this flexibility really comes into play.
Well, and especially in this environment, you know, I've got employees that don't have any kids at home, and they're here working. I have others that have kids at home, and because they are teacher now too, as well as parent. Been very flexible in our schedule and allowing, we've always been equipped where all employees can work from their home house and been flexible in their time.
Chairman, I want to go to a question that we got in advance from one of our members, just south of Dallas. And it's a little bit more of a kind of a unique situation. But I do want to put it on your radar to see if you have any feedback for this particular question. It said, I own and operate an event space in a town of less than 15,000 people. The city used hotel occupancy tax to build another event space here in town. Despite what state law requires, they are using the space primarily for community events rather than attracting tourism. This has created a situation where my biggest competitor is now the local government. What can be done to increase enforcement to ensure these event spaces are built and maintained by hotel occupancy tax are used properly?
Yeah, that's not the only issue. And so, you know, we've seen cities get into owning water parks now, competing with private businesses that own water parks, visitors and convention. So just and it's just, that is one that is a local issue, and we see it get out of hand from time to time. I forget what the school district went on the golf course, and we've seen different things take place that on local funds. But those are all being voted on locally. Now, unfortunately, a lot of times those things can be voted on and passed with about sometimes 2-3% of the voter turnout. And so the key on those issues is voter turnout. You know, the hotel occupancy taxes are often presented as, look, it's a tax that goes into our community, but people from outside our community are paying for it. Well, to me, a tax is kind of a tax, so I'm not a big fan.
Fair enough. I do want to leave a few minutes to for you to offer some closing remarks here. So we're going to do one more question. I also want to mention that we have a number of questions that we received beforehand that we did not get to, and there were a couple in the chat box that we did not get to today. All of those are going to be sent to you after we finish up here, so you and your office can follow up with those members. But I did want to hit one last one before we start closing remarks, and that was licensed child care centers are required to take 24 hours of training for caregivers and 30 for directors. Have any changes been considered for the required number of training hours for daycare employees? It's difficult to fund these trainings during uncertain times.
Yeah, I think we're going to be looking at everything in different ways of offering it, certainly different ways of offering it. You know, providing online services where it can be done on individuals' own time and different ways of providing more flexibility. And so these are obviously issues that, you know, what we've seen is a dramatic change in business and how it operates, and everybody's had to adapt to a different way. I think what we need as your elected officials now is really to hear what worked, what didn't work. And maybe you saw something in a different industry, you know, a different business that they were allowed to adapt and change, and you can think of ways that that could be implemented into your own business. Those are the type of the things that our office wants to hear about and hear from, and that's what we're discussing as our business group in the Senate, is taking some of the changes that took place during this and figuring out, all right, what do we want to extend on that? And some of that's just extending the time of those deregulations and limitation on the rules. And some of it is expanding it to other areas. And so this is for someone who likes the challenge of a challenge and how you adapt to them. These are actually kind of fun times for businesses because it forces us to think in a different way and forces change in a way that I think we can use that to the benefit of the state and to business owners as we move forward.
I agree 100%. I mean, this is the time where we can use this as an opportunity. You know, obviously it's not been good times, but if anything, you know, our folks want to get running again so they can take care of their employees and obviously take care of their customers. And there's nothing harder on a small business is when they have to shut their doors and they can't. They're totally out of control of the situation. But before you close, because I want to give you a chance to do that, I just wanted to remind folks, just as the chairman said, this is our interim time. So Texas, we only meet every other year. We'll be going in the second Tuesday in January in 2021. That's really not that far off. So we use this time to work with our legislators, work with our state agencies, and with these stakeholder groups and start building out priorities. So we need to hear from you all. We send out ballots. Those ballots determine our legislative agendas. John and I don't sit in here and come up with it. We get those ideas and priorities from you all. So answer those ballots so that we can go to Chairman Hancock and his staff and tell them these are the things that are most important. And guess what else we do? If it makes it to the floor, we key vote them on it. And that will show, and, you know, Senator Hancock said 100% for several years. It's because he's hearing you and he's voting, you know, with the business community and not against the business community, and which is why several legislators have very low scores. But just remind, you know, everybody, this is the time right now that we need to be hearing from you. We need to be working with the legislators, the most critical time, really, because once we get into session, it's going, and we don't have time to look back. And then I'll just remind folks, please go to the NFIB.com website. We have a complete build-out resource page for coronavirus that actually, thank you, Senator Hancock, for using our resource page in your materials that you've disseminated in your district. It's great. We've got our legal team. We've got our research team. We've got our DC guys. We've got all of our state folks. So please take advantage of our website and share with any other business owners. And thank you so much for this. Do you have any closing remarks?
I'd just extend on what you said. I mean, we need to hear from you. And I think this is, you know, we forced our way as government through a lot of hurdles that we weren't able to get done legislatively, thanks to the governor and just the desire to keep economy going as much as possible. Well, what we need at this point is kind of hear what worked and what didn't work, and maybe so the doors of opportunity for business change have been flung wide open. I would encourage your members to take advantage of that, and even things that I wouldn't have the mentality of, oh, we've tried that for years, that'll never pass. Well, things happened in the last few months that never happened, but they did. And now the things are open, people are open to change, and especially in the business environment. One of the things we're going to want to do more and more and more is prepare for post-COVID, which means we want to do everything we can to make sure that the Texas economy gets booming again. And the only way it gets booming again is that we hear from business owners and that we keep that engine going and we keep government out of the way, maintain health and safety issues, and a fair regulatory environment that allows individual business owners to succeed. And so the more we hear from you, the better. And elections are important to make sure that we have people that are supportive when legislation starts. So I would just get your concerns, but get your ideas in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Chairman and your staff. Y'all have an open door policy, and we appreciate that. And when we have our small business day, hopefully, in February 2021, I hope all of our members come and say hi and thank you for what you've done. We appreciate it. Everyone, please stay safe and healthy out there, and keep going. We're gonna make it through this. So thank you, Senator. We appreciate it.
All right, thank y'all.